The March 10th regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission will now come to order. We'll pause for the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. For staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation and that there are no known objections. This will be followed by regular business, old business, and adjournment. For each agenda item on regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will then be followed by a presentation from the petitioner should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for public comment. If you wish to comment on the item that the board is considering at the time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a blue speaker card and give it to staff. If you are participating virtually, use the raise your hand feature on your screen. Do not use the feature until the item you wish to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you'll be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be less than or equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, for those participating online, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item. If you wish to speak on a petition, once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you are not certain you wish to speak, still use the raise your hand feature, or if in person, fill out the blue speaker card. You will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal and then address any additional needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. And the first order of business is the approval of the agenda.
Bose, motion to approve agenda.
Jeff Netrebko, second.
It's been properly moved and seconded. We will do this by voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Next, we have notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Number one is March 10th, 2026, 11 a.m. Finance Committee meeting. We had that this morning. We approved a couple of changes in our budget. Next is the March 10th, 2026, 11:30 Personnel Committee meeting. Personnel matters were discussed. No votes were taken on that. And I do just want to take a quick point of privilege as the chair to acknowledge Mr. Edward Morrow, this will be his last meeting presenting before us. He is moving on over to the city. So we'll still be seeing him, but I just wanted to thank him for his time here and wish him the best of luck in the future. Thank you, Mr. Morrow. Thank you. Next, we'll move on to items requested to be removed from the final agenda, which we have none. Next, items requested to be withdrawn, which is the Flume Amendment at 8106 Waters Avenue. I need a motion on that.
So moved. Ross.
Full second.
Properly moved and seconded. We will also do the voice vote for this. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Next, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Number four, approval of the December 16, 2025 MPC meeting minutes. Number five, major subdivision, the Pines at New Hampstead. And number six, major subdivision, DeWitt Ward, Parcel B, Coastal Empire Fairgrounds. I need a motion.
Bose, motion to approve consent agenda.
Ross, second.
It's been properly moved and seconded. We will do a voice vote for this as well. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? There is no old business, so we'll move into regular business. Number 7, 600 Little Neck Road, GDP with variance at 26-000393-ZA.
Good afternoon. This is 600 Little Neck Road. This is Hopeton Landing.
I need to be a stickler for process, but just state your name for the record for everyone, please.
Sorry. Wow. Ken Gorski, Senior Planner for Development Services at MPC. All right. So this is a request for a GDP with variance, and the variance is relief from the pervious parking requirement for parking spaces that are in excess of 125% of the minimum required per ordinance. What you see here is we have an overhead aerial map of the entirety of Hopeton Landing. It basically gives you a little bit of context. We've got Little Neck Road along the bottom diagonal of the yellow outline property. And then we've also got a minor tributary up along the northern portion. And that pretty much defines this portion of the property. But this doesn't give us a whole lot of detail. Moving on, this is the overall master plan for Hopeton Landing. There are multiple varieties of pods here that are broken out for different phases of development. We have multifamily. We have some townhomes. There are institutional and office areas designated, as well as some retail and commercial that are along Little Neck Road. Moving in a little bit closer, this is the focus on the Pod 4 development plan. This is what is up for approval today. This basically consists of 9 multifamily buildings. They also have amenities such as pool and a clubhouse. They have preserved wetlands, a retention pond, and other services and amenities such as trash collection and maintenance structures. For the relief portion of the conversation for the variance, this references City Ordinance Section 9.3-5C3. Basically, it falls under design standards and surfacing requirements. So there is a maximum impervious parking area. So any community or development that has 75 parking spaces or more are required to have any number of spaces that exceeds 125% of the minimum allowable to be paved with a pervious material. What we also have here is we have on the right-hand side of the slide, we have the proposed land use and parking breakdown for the Pod 4 general development plan. And it's a little hard to see, but what this is basically saying is that they are asking for a total of 512 parking spaces, and that includes the breakdown for surface parking. They have some garage parking spaces as well, and the minimum amount per calculation is the 282 spaces. We move on to the next exhibit. So this is the table that delineates the minimum parking space requirements specifically for residential uses. Pretty traditionally throughout Savannah character, there we require 1 parking space per unit for residential development. And while 1 space per unit may be adequate for single family or the downtown and historic districts, when you look at properties along Little Neck Road that are more suburban in nature and more automobile dependent, they tend to require additional parking than the standard Savannah 1 per unit minimum. The developer has noted in their application that their typical parking needs for a multifamily development such as this range from 1.7 to 1.8 parking spaces per dwelling unit. And what they have done for Pod 4 is they've actually used a ratio of 1.65, which is actually below their typicals. So they're already making a bit of a consolation on the quantity of parking that they normally would do. Additionally, in ordinances like this, the permeable parking requirements are considered to help mitigate stormwater runoff, flooding concerns, and absorption rates during heavy storms. The big thing is really just to avoid flood issues, especially in residential areas. For this particular planned development, the minimum required open space is 20%, but Pod 4 is being presented with 69% or nearly 69% open area, which is providing plenty of green space, a retention pond, and preserved wetlands. The concept for the request for relief is that the large amount of open space that they are providing and leaving undeveloped will help improve stormwater runoff and absorption rates to help mitigate any negative impact from having the additional surface parking. One additional point here is that the drainage and stormwater management for the pod has been designed and is compliant with the Hopeton Landing Master Plan for the overall planned development. And it actually performs better than what is allowed by that master plan. And I do not claim to be a civil engineer or a stormwater expert, so I will defer further conversation on that to Thomas and Hutton after our presentation from the MPC. I would also like to point out that the green shaded areas within this image depict the open space areas. So you can kind of see in the image there is quite a bit of open space for this planned development. In summary, the variance request is for approval of the general development plan with the variance for the new multi-family development at 600 Little Neck Road within the Hopeton Landing planned development known as Pod 4. The requested variance relief is from the requirement that parking spaces in excess of 125% of the minimum parking required be constructed of pervious materials. Again, in summary, the petitioner proposes a total of 512 total spaces. 464 of those are surface spaces. The remainder are in enclosed garages. Let's see, per the 125% calculation, 353 spaces are permitted to be impervious. So per the ordinance, parking spaces 354 through 512, which is 158 additional parking spaces, would be required to be constructed from various types of pervious materials. The petitioner is requesting that all additional 158 spaces that they are requesting be allowed to be made of traditional impervious paving. The MPC staff recommends approval of the general development plan with the variance as requested to allow the impervious surfacing for all parking areas with the following condition: that the development of Hopeton Landing Pod 4 shall maintain a minimum of 68% open space consistent with the design proposal that has been presented and reviewed by the Planning Commission. Any questions?
Let's have the petitioner come up and present, please.
Hi, everybody. My name is Will Wallace, and I am with Thomas and Hutton. First and foremost, I want to say thank y'all for y'all's time today. We're really excited about this project and happy to be getting the discussions going and getting the process started. So thank you all. I think, Ken, you did a fantastic job kind of going over, you know, what, you know, our justification is for the variance. There's a couple things that I really appreciate you including. You know, when we got the comment, or I guess taking a step back, you know, we've submitted this general development plan to the city, and they had the comment back for us to come in front of the Planning Commission and present the site plan. And they also had the request for us to request a variance for the additional parking spaces over the 125%. So as, you know, as we kind of started looking into that comment that we received and thinking, okay, how can we justify, you know, asking for a variance for relief of this? The two ways that we sort of looked at this, the two avenues that we looked, were one, the parking count, which Ken, you know, alluded to early. You know, as we have worked with multifamily developers and have done this exact product type on different parcels over time, you know, we've kind of found that really the golden ratio of parking spaces to units is about 1.6 to 1.8, as Ken pointed out. You know, with the way that the current city code is written, you know, you could actually have a scenario where you have a three bedroom with three people living there with three individual cars, but the code only allots for one parking space for that unit. So, you know, we really feel like the 512 spaces we're showing are for a reason. That was the minimum amount we could show and get the ratios that we felt like were responsible and were the right thing to do for the development. You know, we can, you know, us being the civil in the middle, we can understand why our owner, the developer, wants to have adequate parking for his apartment complex. It certainly adds value. And it's just a, you know, again, we feel like it's the right thing that we're trying to do by having this additional parking. And in a way, it almost exacerbates how much parking that we need due to what the code is saying. So I think if I go back, let's see, two slides. I think this right here, and I hope everybody can read this well. I can't, so I'm going to open up the hard copy I brought. But just, you know, the kind of, you know, like I said, we looked at the variance in two ways. The first was sort of the constraints that we're working against with the current parking code. The second is looking at the variance and looking at the code itself and thinking, okay, what is the intent of this code? What is the intent of all parking spaces over 125% being pervious material? You know, us being civil engineers, we understand that that relates to stormwater. You know, if you have a situation where you have an excess of parking spaces, you know, the city doesn't want there to be additional burden on the surrounding watershed from the additional runoff from those spaces. With that being said, I think that this pod in Hopeton Landing with the current layout and site plan that we're showing, it really takes care of what we need to make sure we're keeping in check for relating to our stormwater requirements. And getting into Coleman's master plan that they have here, if you look, this is the overall Hopeton, the overall Hopeton development. And then pod four I have highlighted here. So the extents of pod four highlighted. It's hard to see, but what Coleman Company did the master plan, and what Coleman Company did was they basically designed this whole area and accounted for the runoff from the entire area. So they had to take into account, they had to assume things about pod four, pod five, all of the pods as they were pulling together the stormwater master plan and assessing how much runoff would come from the overall development. As they were doing that, they split pod four into three different sub-basins, basin 4B, 3B, and 4A. And what they have done is they've actually provided parameters that we, being the developer of pod four, have to meet to ensure that this master plan stays intact. And Coleman did a great job. So they split up our sub-basins, or they split up the pod into sub-basins, and they actually did their overall master plan with a curve number of 92 for pod four. So if anybody's unfamiliar with what a curve number is, it's essentially just a ratio that relates to how much runoff a piece of land will produce. The closer to 100 you get, the more runoff that a piece of land will produce. So Coleman Company, and it all relates to how much impervious area is on the site. If you've got much more impervious area, your curve number is going to be higher. Bare woods that have no impervious area are going to have a curve number in the high 70s. So you can see it ranges from the high 70s up to 100 for the general soil types in the low country. What Coleman has done is actually assumed that pod four would have a curve number of 92, which is a very high curve number. To give you a perspective, a 92 curve number is something you would typically see in a downtown district, a commercial district, think kind of downtown Savannah. That's where you would typically see a higher curve number, like a 92. So with that, if you go to, I think it was a couple slides down, if you go to the exhibit we pulled together, you can actually see when we have gone and calculated our curve numbers for pod four, and you can see we broke up our pod in the exact same ways that the master plan did as well. If you look at pod four and the curve numbers that we generated, we're at an 88, an 89, and an 89. So all three of those under 92. And what we actually wanted to do to quantify how much relief that is giving the overall system, we actually kind of did a little storm model and assessed how much are we actually reducing the runoff that was allotted for pod four. Pod four was allotted the amount of runoff that is consistent with a 92 curve number, and our curve number is less. So I ran a 25-year storm and a 100-year storm, and what I found was for the 25-year storm, we're reducing the runoff from what we were originally allotted from the master plan by about 30,000 cubic yards. That's per 25-year storm rain event. For a 100-year rain event, we're up almost to 31,000 cubic yards of water. So that's every time it rains on pod four with the site plan we're showing, there will be that much less runoff per those storm events than what really was approved during the master plan stage that Coleman did. You know, so as far as stormwater, that's kind of the big gist. And that's why, you know, those two things together are why we're requesting the variance. We feel like the code is making this a tricky situation, and we want to do the right thing by having enough parking spaces. And then caveating that with the stormwater, you know, study that we've done to show that we're actually provide or we're causing less runoff than what was actually intended for pod four. Those two things together, we believe, give us a good justification for requesting the variance. So that's really kind of our variance. I'm happy to answer any other questions. You know, we've got, you know, our site plan in front, and I'll go to kind of our overall GDP again. One other thing I did want to say, this 68% right here that's in the green area, it actually is including the preserved wetlands as well. So I did want to clarify that. The 68% does include the adjacent wetlands. And I will go back to our overall general development plan, and I'm happy to answer any questions that anybody may have.
All right, thank you. Any questions for the petitioner? Go ahead.
The open space that is green in the diagram here, is that going to be grass?
Yes, ma'am, it will.
Okay, and how are you going to irrigate that?
There will be an irrigation system. Normally, the way that we do it with these multifamily developments is we will tie into, you know, like as if you look at this plan right now, Kenneth
Lane. Like a shallow well?
Well, so that is an option. The other option is that we could tie into the city system and stub out an irrigation stub, and it would have its own backflow preventer and meter. We do it like that sometimes. The irrigation well is another option. Typically, most of the times I've worked in the city, we'll do the irrigation meter, and it'll be tied into the city's water system, but it'll be metered and billed by the city and go into our ERU calcs and everything like that.
And those sprinklers, in all likelihood, will hit some of the impervious materials?
I'm sorry.
Those sprinklers will, in all likelihood, hit some of the impervious parking surfaces, right? Ideally, no, but reasonably, yes.
Normally, they put the irrigation right off the backside of the sidewalk, and it won't spray too, you know, maybe the sidewalk will get a little wet, but it shouldn't be shooting out into the road. It'll be kind of focused on the green space side.
And the lines that we see running through parcel four there, do those indicate any sort of a grade?
They do not. Are you talking about the red lines?
Yeah.
So what those are, that going back to Coleman's master plan that they did, Coleman basically took this overall area and they split it into little sub basins,
right,
based on where the water's going in all different parts. And what I have done, you know, we have to go by what the master plan says. We have to satisfy the requirements, right, of the master plan. So these are actually little drainage basins for pod four. So these show.
So those big dotted lines do not necessarily indicate higher ground?
They do. So pod four, if you look, and it's kind of hard to see with the contours, pod four is actually a little, it's kind of crowned and the high point's in the middle. And that's exactly why, if you look at the kind of red line on our exhibit we did, it's running through the middle. Half of it's sheeting off one way, half of it's coming off the other way.
So what's your objection to using pervious materials throughout?
I think
cost.
It's not necessarily that. It's more just that we feel like it, you know, if you look at what Coleman had master planned, they accounted for a density of up to 16 units per acre. Mm-hmm. If you come and calculate our density per acre, it's only about 10 units per acre. And because of that, because that was the intent that the client and the owner wanted, was kind of that they wanted the 282 units. It really allowed us to have this layout that just has a tremendous amount of green space. And, you know, I think everybody in here can think, if you think about rain on grass versus rain on asphalt versus rain on a pervious paver, what absorbs it the best? The grass does. So we feel like the reason why we want to, you know, get relief from the excess spaces being pervious is because we're not just meeting the code right now. We feel like we're going above and beyond it as is in this plan right here. So because we feel like we're already going above and beyond it, adding 158 pervious paver parking spaces would be going impervious. Above and beyond
impervious.
Pervious spaces would be going above and beyond where we've already where we're already at, which is above and beyond what the code says, if that makes sense what I'm saying.
Yeah, I just am always a fan of pervious rather than impervious surfaces.
Yes, ma'am. I understand, and I am too, and that's why I really like this layout, because of how much green space is in it. There's a ton of amenity spaces, and really, I mean, that, you know, knowing just kind of what I've learned in my time doing civil, having the green space is really what helps. The pervious can help. The pervious helps a lot in situations like very compact in downtown where you have to have the pervious. In a situation like this, the grass works better than the pervious. So even if you had a situation where we only had 20% green space, which is what the code called out for, but we had all the excess parking spaces being pervious material, that situation would still be significantly more extensive and, for lack of a better way to put it, taxing on the existing watershed than this right here. Having the high amount of green space is probably the number one thing we can do to reduce the runoff from the development.
Are there any more
and
questions?
Do you know,
I'm sorry.
Promise. Last question.
Okay.
Do you know whether any additional buildings are planned?
There are not. 282 units was the max that we wanted to explore in this, which again works out nicely for the, how all this has worked out, because when Coleman did their master plan, they assumed 16 units per acre, which works out to 330 units. So if you think about it, really with what the city previously approved with the master plan, you could put 330 units on in pod four and it would be compliant with the master plan. We're choosing 282 just because that's the way it's working out with the programming with the development team. And these are also just kind of from a site perspective, great things that come out of that.
Thank you. Well said.
Any other questions for the petitioner?
I just wanted to dovetail on that. So, therefore, is there any objection to the condition that open space remain at 69%, at 68%, because you're not planning in the development? But I was just thinking down the road.
Yeah, so based on the conversations we have currently had, this was just to give everybody sort of an insight of where we are from a design team. This was really, once we got through this, we were hitting go on designing this layout. This is the layout our clients are good with. This is the layout, barring getting this approval, we'll have GDP approval after we get through this, you know, and then we're ready to go with designing this. To answer your question, I don't foresee any changes. So I think that green space number will stay at what it's at.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the petitioner? Yes, Mr. Chair.
So, Karen Jarrett here. And the wetlands are included in your open space calculations, but wetlands really don't absorb any water, do they? I mean, they're already wet, correct? They would increase the runoff. What is your curve number for the wetlands?
The curve number for the wetlands is higher. But the curve number that I had talked about that we generated, the 88 and 89. If you look at, and I'll go back to this other exhibit. If you look at the exhibit that we produced, those curve numbers are not including that wetland area. So to your point.
But the shaded area does include the wetlands. Your overall 68%, 69% open space does include the wetlands.
That's correct. The open space includes the wetlands, but our curve number calculations do not.
Okay.
Can I just ask for clarification? Wetlands do collect water, which is why they're wetlands and we protect
yes,
them.
Yes, but wetlands don't absorb water. They run it off. When you're looking at doing a drainage design, the wetlands don't take up any of the water itself. They just provide a conduit. It's kind of like a pipe.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
And the thing I would say about that is because to your point, you're right. Mm-hmm. But that's how it is in pre-development and post-development. There's no real change with that. You know, those wetlands, we're not touching them.
Understood. Yeah. Understood. It's just that if we're thinking about an area where we're not going to be putting in pervious parking, and we're counting the wetlands as part of the open space, that doesn't really seem to jive for me. I guess I can see that it would, but
I think the big thing really is just that we're meeting those curve numbers. And I personally, in my opinion, from what I've seen, it's good that we're not including the wetlands and the curve numbers. We're really taking the upland portion and saying, hey, we're coming in and putting this development, but even with this impervious area we're adding, we're under what the targets that were previously. When they're out there building this master infrastructure right now, and it's all been sized and calibrated based on a certain amount of runoff that we would get from a curve number of 92. You know, ours are coming in less, and that really is kind of the big thing here that's helping us. And like I showed with those numbers kind of in the top right, it's kind of hard to put into perspective what 30,000 cubic yards looks like, but that's per rain event. I mean, if you get one of those one day a week over the summer, that's really starting to add up on a lot of water that is not running off the site, that really, with the way the master plan was set up, it could be.
Any other questions for petitioner?
Do one more follow up.
Yes, go ahead.
So no time in the future are you going to fill in this middle section with any additional buildings?
No, ma'am. That's just amenity spaces. There might be some grill stations or something like that set. We haven't really gotten the programming figured out with the amenity areas, but it won't be, it'll be just typical amenity spaces, you know, maybe like a volleyball field net set up, something like that.
Thank you.
Kind of open space activity sort of deal.
All right. I don't have any speaker cards. Anybody online? All right. So we're open to board discussion. And if there is none, open the floor for our motion.
Stevens, I move that we approve staff's recommendation.
Second.
It's been properly moved and seconded. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Foles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes, with the condition.
That is the staff's recommendation. Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. The motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much.
Next on the agenda, we have number 8, map amendment 8106 Waters Avenue, RSF 6 to OIT to establish office use.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the board. My name is Subhashi Karunaratna, and I'll be presenting the staff recommendations and findings for 8106 Waters Avenue. Here, the petitioner is requesting a zoning map amendment from RSF 6 to OIT. The proposed use here is an office, and the property was previously utilized as a hair salon. And the subject property is located mid-block between Sherwood Avenue and Madrid Avenue. The parcel is 0.16 acres and it has a frontage of 43 feet and a depth of 165 feet. The property contains a single family residence built in 1978 and it has a living area of 1,040 square feet. As I mentioned, it was previously used as a hair salon, and here you can see the transition of the property from the residential to commercial from 2007 to 2025. And this is the interior of the property before, when it was used as a hair salon. The subject parcel, along with majority of the surrounding area, was originally zoned as R1, single family residential, in 1962 by Chatham County. Upon annexation into the city of Savannah in 1979, it was classified as R6. In 2000, following the Grove Park zoning study, the city resolved to maintain the existing residential zoning pattern in the interior of the subdivision while considering petitions for non-residential zoning along Waters Avenue case by case. So here on the map, you can see the previous zoning, and clearly along the Waters Avenue, the center portion, let me point it for you. This portion is the only portion that's facing waters and is zoned residential. Everything else is non-residentially zoned. Moving on to the zoning map, as I mentioned, our property is currently zoned as RSF6. And there was a previous rezoning request in 2010, but it was denied on the basis of spot zoning. But right now, we can come into the conclusion that there are multiple other properties, which is zoned for OIT, OIE, and neighborhood business in the surrounding, and that the requested zoning, which states the district is established to facilitate orderly transition of properties from its original developed for properties originally developed for residential use to limited non-residential uses. These properties are located in areas where increased automobile traffic, road widening, or other factors have diminished residential viability, resulting in the need for a transitional area to buffer surrounding residential properties. So that is the definition of the requested OIT zoning. And the proposed, we think that this is much appropriate than what is existing, the RSF6. When you look at the flume map, you can see that majority of the properties facing waters is designated as commercial neighborhood. But this designation doesn't align with OIT according to the zoning ordinance. What would strictly be consistent with the OIT would be civic institutional. But if you look at the civic institutional designation, it says areas that are consist of educational, religious, medical, or public uses, which may be in campus settings and may include private or public open spaces. And these mostly have schools, places of worship, hospitals, libraries, public recreation, and et cetera. So the requested zoning aligns better with commercial neighborhood flume designation than civic institutional. Despite that contradiction between the flume and the zoning ordinance, we think that this proposed zoning is much suited for the subject property. And based on those findings, and because the necessary utilities are available for the office use for this property, MPC staff recommends approval. And additionally, we would like to we have additional comments saying Section 5.15.2 should be revised to allow OIT in the commercial neighborhood of flume districts, as it is less intense in classification. This amendment would better reflect surrounding conditions and the intent of the comp plan. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Is the petitioner here?
Yes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. For the record, Josh Yellen, representing Bernard Property Holdings. We have with us Ms. Jenny Bernard, who is also the tenant and operator. She has her interior design studio there. It has been recently relocated there, but as you can see from the photos that were shown, it is a low-intensity use, much like the prior use. We are here trying to kind of correct a wrong that's gone back since 2010. As Subhashi mentioned, and thank you for the staff report on this item, there was a rezoning in 2010 where I believe the nail salon went in and sought rezoning for the property. That was denied at the time. 2010 was a long time ago. But that, I said nail salon, hair salon, kept operating for the past 15 years until the property was sold to Ms. Bernard. And if I could pull up, am I allowed to get off of this just for context very quickly? And I will not take too long on this presentation. That's for the application. Yep. Thank you. When this property was marketed and sold to Ms. Bernard. I do want to show some of the photos from the property. Oh, I have to change that. Sorry. Sorry, I was trying to make it easy. My apologies. This was the property going back to 2022. But when it was sold, even from the Zillow listing, everything was based upon this being a commercial property. It wasn't until Ms. Bernard went out to seek a business tax license, having renovated the property, moved into the property, started operating on the property, went to seek a tax certificate from the city where it was flagged that, hey, going back to 2010, this site has not been operating appropriately. That's when we became involved to try and correct this issue. This is a good user with a good zoning classification for the site. We had meetings with City of Savannah staff and with MPC staff. We settled on the OIT designation being the most minimally intrusive designation that fits in keeping with the character of the area. We weren't seeking a BC designation to come in and put a fast food restaurant here. This is for the office institutional use. And so we respectfully request that you approve of this rezoning request as has been recommended by staff. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Any questions for the petitioner, Ms. Jarrett?
This is one of those areas where Mr. Morrow needs to do some of his neighborhood planning, correct?
Yeah, hopefully the whole corridor. So thank you all.
Any other questions for the petitioner or statements? I also don't have any speaker cards for this one, so board discussion or open the floor for a motion.
Motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Bowles, second.
It's been properly moved and seconded. Ms. Samick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion carries. Thank you. And finally on the agenda, we have number 9, minor subdivision, final plat, 501 East 55th Street.
Okay, after a few technical adjustments, Ken Gorski again, Senior Planner for Development Services on behalf of the MPC. What we have here is we have a minor subdivision request for 501 East 55th Street. The subject parcel is 0.32 acres. It is currently zoned RSF6 in the Ardmore Conservation District. What we have here on the, we have an aerial view of the subject property in the lower right-hand section of Hull Park. It is the trapezoidal property in blue. All right. In terms of information and findings, the subject parcel is 13,807 square feet, and the zoning only requires 6,000 square foot minimum lot area. The property currently contains a single family dwelling of historic character that was built on or around the 1950s. The property is located in the Ardmore Conservation District, and that district focuses primarily on maintaining the neighborhood's historic fabric and establishing a community process for reviewing changes and demolition of contributing buildings. Per subdivision ordinance section 8-2045A, MPC staff may request the review of a minor subdivision application by the Planning Commission at its discretion, which is why we are before you today. Findings for this property, the proposed subdivision would result in a new lot that they are labeling as 10A, and that would have an area of 6,000 square feet, with the primary frontage of just over 150 feet on Atlantic Street, and a secondary frontage or rear access to the East 55th Lane. The remaining portion of the parcel would be labeled as Lot 10B and would have 7,807 square feet and would currently and would maintain the existing 2,000 square foot home and has a primary frontage along East 55th Street and has rear access to the lane behind it. We'd like to emphasize that demolition of the existing dwelling is not proposed, and this is merely to request the subdivision of the existing parcel. Traffic engineering has been contacted on this, and they have given a conditional preliminary approval. With that condition, the lane is the primary access, and all vehicular access to that new parcel would be required from the lane, and there would be no new curb cuts allowed upon Atlantic or East 55th. This is an image of the proposed minor subdivision. What we have is the area on green on the right is the portion that would remain that has the existing house on it. And then the yellow triangle is what is being proposed as the new subdivided lot. And that faces onto Hall Park. So we move into the discussion items. This proposal fails to meet the intent of the zoning ordinance and subdivision regulations in three critical ways. First of all, it would permit a subdivision that disrupts the established development pattern of the originally platted subdivision. And we have the sandboard map on the right-hand side of the slide to help display that. Second point, it is averse to the intent of the Ardmore Conservation District. And the third point is that the approval of a subdivision with an irregularly shaped geometry is likely to result in a self-created hardship that will require future variance relief. So we dive into these three discussion points a little deeper. In terms of disrupting the established development pattern of the original Sandler map subdivision plat, City of Savannah subdivision regulations explicitly grant the Planning Commission the authority to deny subdivisions that technically meet the base zoning standards but fail contextually. And the call out on that, as indicated here in the blue circle, is lots shall not be further subdivided if such action would alter the character of the recorded subdivision or adversely impact the visual quality of the established development pattern. The Ardmore neighborhood is defined by a specific rhythm of spacing, lot orientation, and historic relationship to the public amenities, such as Hall Park. Although some of the lots in the neighborhood vicinity may have been subdivided in the past, the historic cadence of the streetscape, particularly concerning spacious lots that are surrounding the park, which are mostly the trapezoidal ones that you see around the Hall Park perimeter here on the Sanborn maps, those remain a very defining feature of this conservation district. Item number two. We believe that this subdivision request is averse to the Ardmore Conservation District. While this district does not explicitly prohibit subdivision or recombinations that are found in other historic districts, its overarching regulatory purpose is to preserve the character and nature of Savannah's older neighborhoods. This character, particularly for Ardmore, is derived fundamentally from the ratio of building mass to open space. By subdividing this parcel, the density will be adversely affected and increased beyond the established pattern, especially that area that faces Hull Park. And another concerning issue with that would be the home's angled orientation, which would be contrary to all of the street-facing majority of parcels in the surrounding blocks. There are also regulations that require, to the greatest extent possible, side lot lines be at right angles to straight street lines, and that is to help provide regularity in streetscapes and traffic patterns. There's also regulation for corner lots for residential use shall be provided with sufficient width and depth to permit the establishment of appropriate building setback lines from both streets. And our final item for discussion, is that creating this parcel with a triangular shaped geometry would likely result in a self-created hardship and require future variance relief. And the applicant did provide a sample concept. However, it is not guaranteed that they will end up being the builder of the proposed dwelling. It should be noted that the sample they provided would have already required a variance to allow an accessory structure within a side yard. A subdivision should not be approved if it creates lots that cannot be developed desirably without relief from zoning standards. To grant a variance, a board must find that special conditions exist, which are peculiar to the land and not the result of the applicant's actions. If the subdivision is approved, any subsequent need for setbacks or coverage variances would arise solely from the applicant's voluntary action of subdividing this land. This constitutes a self-imposed hardship that is grounds for denial under Section 3.21.10 of the zoning ordinance. In summary, MPC staff recommends denial of this proposed minor subdivision. Are there any questions for MPC?
Thank you. Is the petitioner here?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. And before I get started, I did have a PDF that I would try and pull up and then get the screen back. Was it on the agenda? Thank you. Once again, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, Josh Yellen, representing the owner of 501 East 55th Street, who is here with us today. I would like to state that this is a very unique application and very unique hearing. By unique, I might mean unprecedented here, that I have never stood before you to argue for a by right subdivision that is now required to have a public hearing for a lot that meets all standards under the ordinance. Under the City of Savannah subdivision requirements, we are required to have a 6,000 square foot lot. We have a 6,000 square foot lot. We provided a concept plan which shows that we meet all setback requirements. That standard has been met. Yet we are here today because we are trying to read new guidelines and new rules into the ordinance, which frankly are not there, and which is why you haven't seen a hearing like this before, for a by right subdivision that now has a public hearing. I will note that yes, we are in the Ardmore Park or the Ardsley Park Ardmore Conservation District. This is the staff report from when the conservation district was first established, because we are talking about what was the intent of the Ardmore Conservation District. The Neighborhood Association is seeking to have some protection from unnecessary demolitions of historic buildings. As was stated, we are not intending to demolish any historic building. So the conservation district was established. This ordinance will require that all demolitions of historic buildings are reviewed by the Planning Commission at a public hearing and public notice will be provided. In no way was this conservation district intended to do anything other than stop the demolition of historic structures. I went and pulled up Alderman Nick Palumbo's blog from the time when he was the Neighborhood Association president who was advocating for the Ardmore Conservation District. He calls this a Goldilocks ordinance, that all it's going to do is protect the district from needless teardown. No more, no less. I think of it as a Goldilocks protection for our neighborhood. Just right. Yet today we're here speaking about something that is not related to demolition. We're talking about the subdivision of a lot into a lot that meets the requirements of the ordinance. And yet we are here for a public hearing. And as mentioned, I think this is the first time this has come before you. From an ordinance standpoint, my job is to rely on what we see in the text of the ordinance. In other overlay districts, yes, the text is clear that subdivisions may require review. That was recently added to the historic district ordinance after a petition from the Neighborhood Association. The text of the ordinance was changed and that process was clearly established. Here, Ardmore, when this district was established, they were not looking at this concern. It is not part of the ordinance, and it's not an item that should come before this board for review. I'm particularly wary that we're trying to use the intent of this district to somehow prevent a subdivision which is permitted by right under law. I'd also like to mention that part of the argument against this by right subdivision is based upon section 2021C of the subdivision ordinance. I do not believe that this section applies here. Section 82021C applies to a subdivision for single family detached units that were quote unquote designed to be developed as a unified whole. I do not believe that the Ardmore Conservation District, if we have seen established and built out, subdivided in 1925, this was not a planned development, not a single family home development. This is not Levitt Town or Pooler or any single family type subdivision you might see in the suburbs that had a unified developer that went in and put in each and every single family home. The lots were sold, they were developed. And since that date, which is also equally as important here, this neighborhood has continued to evolve. It is not a static district that was set in 1925 with static lot lines. There has been movement. And so I also looked at the same Sanborn map that was provided in the staff report. And I went through, and this was not fun, and I used a Sharpie, and it made me very dizzy doing this. But I went through and looked at all of the subdivisions and recombinations that have occurred since, I believe this map was from 1955. The lots have changed in this area. Particularly, this is the house that we are discussing. Most notably, these three corners have all changed in their lot configuration. This corner in particular, some of y'all may remember because some of you may have been on the board at the time, that there are now three single family homes on this lot. The original intent was to put four single family homes on this lot, but it was recombined and new houses were put in here. They have not been any detriment to the neighborhood. We recently rezoned the school here to permit multifamily, another change to the neighborhood. Lots were combined, lots were separated. There, as I've counted here, I believe that there were 83 different subdivisions or recombinations that have occurred since this Sanborn map was drafted. On Hall Park, from the original Sanborn map, there are seven lots fronting the park. As mentioned, one has been rezoned, three have been subdivided or recombined. And this is the pattern of development that we see in Ardmore. It's not something that we are trying to set a precedent for by our petition. The pattern of development here has been that larger lots have been subdivided and smaller lots have been recombined. That is what we see up and down in Ardsley Park. We see it in Ardmore. We see it across the city of Savannah. And this is because this neighborhood, despite having protections on demolition, it is not a frozen district. It's dynamic and it's currently evolving. Lastly, I'd like to talk about the point about the future variants, which may or may not be necessary. We submitted a concept plan to staff. We also submitted our subdivision, which shows that no variances are necessary. Based upon conversations that I've had with the applicant, it is entirely possible for someone to put in a 1,200 square foot footprint home on that lot and not ask for variances. No variance would be required. When I stand before you, I don't like to discuss hypotheticals. There is a plan here that works, and we have requested no variance for this site. And in fact, no variance is likely necessary for this site. So I don't want to disagree with the staff presentation that could a variance be possible? Yes, no. But the standards from the ordinance are met. We have a lot that meets the RSF 6 requirements. We submitted a subdivision plat for that. For the first time that I can remember, a subdivision plat was not rejected. It wasn't said that you are not meeting the standards of the ordinance. It was stating that you must come before the MPC for additional review because. And I don't believe that those because statements that the Ardmore Conservation District or that the subdivision regulations apply to this site. The Ardmore Conservation District does not prohibit the subdivision of homes, and it was never intended to prohibit the subdivision of lots. The subdivision regulations, yes, they apply, but the standards being quoted are for mass developed subdivisions, not for a district such as this. We also don't believe that we will require any variances for the site. And so in this instance, I do believe that we have met all the requirements of the ordinance, and this subdivision should be approved. As mentioned, this was very unique. I've never been before you with an argument like this before, but we have met all of the standards for the subdivision, and we do respectfully request that you approve of today's subdivision request, but we are happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions for Mr. Yellen? Ms. Ross?
Mr. Yellen, do you have any proposed drawings for the house that might occupy this property?
Let me go back to, sorry, I'm going to jump around again and make everyone angry. So we don't have proposed concept plans. The intent was, I believe, to sell this lot and someone would develop it. What is shown, and if I can zoom in, I'm not sure if you're seeing the screen or not.
Thank you. It's, yeah.
Oh.
Sorry. So my question then is there sufficient on-street parking to address the needs of this home,
Based upon the traffic engineer finding that was in the staff report, they are going to allow access from the lane. And so there will be parking at the rear of the site through the lane. So it'll be off-street parking to address the needs for this home.
Okay, so you'll put a garage in? And
yes, it could be a garage or a driveway at the rear of the site.
But is there on-street parking available also?
So there is city on-street parking surrounding Hall Park, but the intent would be for us to satisfy the one parking space requirement. It would likely be two spaces, but the one parking space requirement would be satisfied on-site. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry that y'all can't see the screen.
Any other questions for the petitioner? We don't have any public comment on this one either. So open up for a board discussion and a motion.
Yeah, let's do board discussion first. I think this is a complete stretch of a fantasy Goldilocks ordinance, and I think it meets all the requirements. I don't think we have the ability to deny this.
Any other discussion? Any thoughts? All right, well, the floor is open for a motion.
Jeff Ventrica, I move that we go against staff recommendation and we approve this petition.
Plunk Ross, second.
It's been properly moved and seconded. We will go to a vote. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Milder?
Yes.
Mr. Ventrica?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I two vote yes. Motion carries. And that is all that we have on the agenda today. So
I have a question. Are y'all at work next Tuesday? Y'all gonna make them brave these drunken hordes of obnoxious green people and come in? It'll come right in front of you.
Woo-hoo.
This space may be the safest space to be in.
When I become,
the city doesn't make it a holiday first day.
If I could, to address one commissioner, it's a family event, and two, it is not a holiday for the city as all city employees are working the event capacity. It's our Super Bowl. So
I'll be in Ogletree Square at 3 a.m. So anyone that wants to come have some food on their lunch break or Chatham Artillery Punch, I will be right there from 3 a.m. on.
And what?
I will be there at 3 a.m. Yes. Deal with the obnoxious drunk. You did.
And I thank the city staff for working that day because they do a fantastic job of cleaning up after that parade. It's amazing. The next day, it seems like there wasn't a parade at all.
When I become mayor, I'll go ahead and make an official holiday in the city of Savannah.
All right. I need a motion to adjourn, please.
Second.
Aye. Any opposed? All right.